It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on this Thursday. 1 hour to go before we hand things off to the Rooster. If you're not subscribed to the Team 980's YouTube page, be sure to do that. You can follow me on Twitter at the Denton Day. Let's go out to the phones. Our guy Brian DiArdo, CBS Sports, is kind enough to give us a few moments here on a Thursday. Brian, first and foremost, man, always appreciate it, so thanks for making some time for us. What did you think of the tush push not being banned after it felt like yesterday, all morning, it was going to be banned?
Well, hey, Denton's always going to be with you guys. Yeah, I mean, we, as most media outlets do, we kind of had a story all ready to roll, and it failed, and it didn't fail, so we kind of had to scramble and piece together a story saying that it survived. You know, I'm somewhat surprised, but not entirely, because, you know, as you know, last month when they voted on it the first time, there was a 16-16 split. They needed 24 votes to you know, push the proposal over the goal line. So I just thought that to get 8 more votes was going to be tough, you know, and they got 6 more. And I think Jeffrey Loria, you know, came in guns blazing. You know, he was going to try to make sure this proposal passed or do everything in his power to make sure it passed. And he brought in Jason Kelce, who, according to ESPN's reporting, I think had a significant role in the tush push surviving. Already the second, the Steelers president, I think, actually told ESPN that he believes that Kelce was able to sway a few voters to change their mind. And ultimately, you know, they were able to get just enough support, the 22-10, which ironically was the score of the Eagles playoff win over the Packers, the team that submitted the proposal. So I am surprised, but not entirely surprised. And I think overall the main thing is, until there is concrete evidence that suggests the play is more dangerous than normal plays, then I think, you know, it's going to be hard to overrule this. And unfortunately, I think all of us hope that there's not a terrible injury on this play that would obviously, you know, would expedite, you know, this getting outlawed or banned or whatever. But I will say this, I think it's on borrowed time, and I think this was a stay of execution. I think, you know, next year, if this is still an issue, I think that they're going to get that 2 or 3 extra votes to outlaw this.
So, Brian, I've seen the news that you just gave us about Jason Kelce and his speech. Do you have any idea what he actually said that was able to sway the votes? I haven't seen any reporting on that.
So I think it was the a lot of the owners, I think, just appreciated having the player's perspective. And I think he kind of came into it like almost like Loria was the bad cop, he was the good cop. And he said on his podcast, and to your point, there hasn't been a lot of specifics regarding what he said, but he did say on his podcast, like, I don't care if this passes or not, but I want to just go and kind of present, you know, a player's perspective on the play and actually kind of more explain the intricacies of the play. Because I think a lot of us just look at it, they think rugby scrum, you know, it's kind of barbaric. There's not a lot of schematics involved with it. So I think he did a good job with the owners kind of presenting the play, also reinforcing that, you know, the safety elements of it. And I also think he did want to debunk rumors in the previous league meeting about his reasoning to retire and how it may have been impacted by the tush push and injuries he may have suffered because of the play. And he did say on his podcast he was going to debunk those. Specifically, I heard there was a good back and forth between him and Jerry Jones. And at one point, you know, the Cowboys owner, obviously. And at one point, I think he even said to Jerry, like, oh, I see your point on that. Or you know, I understand your concerns here. So, you know, maybe Kelce's got a lot on his plate already, but maybe a salesman or a product supporter might not be a bad job title to add to it. But I just think, you know, his clarity, his transparency, I think there were pictures and videos of the play that complemented his speech. So I just think the way he talked to the owners, the way he discussed everything, I think they appreciated it. And I think overall it was a significant factor in the play surviving.
Do you think that Kelce will now be brought in by other NFL teams so they can utilize his knowledge of the play? Because obviously he's Philadelphia through and through, but he's not employed by them anymore. And he clearly knows the ins and outs of the play because no one else across the league has done it as well as Philadelphia. And he's been a key component to that. Do you think that there might be some teams that try and utilize some of the knowledge that he either presented during this meeting or just use his knowledge in general this offseason to come up with their own way of doing it?
a fantastic question, but I think the question was answered in something that you said, which is he's Philadelphia through and through. So you'd have to, and he's made a good amount of money in his playing career and his post-playing career. So I don't know, a blank check might be what it takes for that to happen, especially if it's Jerry Jones. Or now, again, I could see Jerry Jones, you know, saddling up to him somewhere with the Johnny Walker Blue and saying, "You know, come over down to Dallas for a weekend and let's talk about this a little more." But yeah, I mean, to your point. Now, that being said, I think if it was like a general presentation to the league, then I like similar to yesterday, or if he went to select camps, I think if it was more of a broader thing, I could see that, but I can't see him going to like a New York or a Dallas or Washington, right? And try to, well, I don't think Green Bay would invite him, so we don't have to worry about them. But yeah, I don't think he'll be doing that like team by team. I will say this quickly. I do think that the owners like the player perspective, and I think that's something that if there's players, you know, like Kelsey, that are willing to speak and that have the respect of the owners that Kelsey has, I think that might be something that happens more during these meetings.
Yeah, Washington should have sent Frankie Louvu there. You're like, "Hey, this is why I hate the play."
That's true.
And maybe we could get rid of it. I'm curious for you personally, because it feels like everyone has a side that they fall with this particular play. Are you in favor of the tush push, or do you also want it banned?
I don't really care. And I know that's not sexy radio, and you just said everybody's got an opinion. I don't frankly have one. I don't. So I guess by saying that, I'm not against it. So I guess that means I'm for it. So I kind of walked through my own thought process on that on air here with you and your listeners. But I'm not fazed by it. To me, it's just another play, and it's part of the game. And to me, it's a juiced up version or roided up version of the quarterback sneak. I do think that there is an element of, I think just because no one's gotten seriously injured yet doesn't mean that won't happen at some point. And I don't like the fact that we're kind of just waiting to change. I like being preeminent, right? Like, let's try to fix it before it gets bad. And I think that is part a lot of the owner's concerns. And, you know, and I will say this again, like, you know, like we all know speeding isn't a great idea, like going 95 and a 35. We don't need to get in a car accident to know that. And so, you know, having a quarterback getting shoved by people behind him when he's trying to, you know, push through a guy in front of him that's 300 some pounds, who is also trying to block two or three guys that are also 300 pounds, it's probably not a great idea. So I do think that there is absolutely an injury element to the play and puts players at risk. So, but the issue is, again, I mean, there's no, you know, data that's been presented yet to suggest that this play is more dangerous than others, but I don't like that element of the play. But everything else with it, I'm fine with. And I think it's become like a free throw, right, in the NBA, where once, you know, the Eagles need a yard, they're going to get it. So I just think that this creates challenges for other teams. And I'm a fan of evolution. I mean, the NFL is a game that's evolved just like other sports have, you know, with the NBA, with the three-point shot and things like that. So I'm all for evolving the game. Let's just hope that from a safety perspective, the play continues to run the way it does without a big injury to you know, any of the players involved.
Brian Diardo, CBS Sports, with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. Why do you think that the Lions pulled their request for new seating at the meetings yesterday?
I'm really glad you asked me this question, because I was on another show yesterday and I was gathering information about this when I was asked, and I wasn't quite equipped yet, but I am now. So, from what I've read and researched, the NFL kind of like nudged them to present it. Like they Roger Goodell reportedly does not like the current playoff structure, and he wanted somebody to present the initiative. And the Lions, obviously, as we know, you know, they were one loss away from being 14-3 and going on the road. Ultimately, that was the Vikings that had to do that after losing to Detroit in Week 18. But I think it was pulled because they knew it wasn't going to pass, and I don't think the NFL wanted that initiative to be voted on, and it was a blowout, right? Like 27-5 or 30-2 or something like that. So
right.
I don't think the NFL wanted that presented until it had a legitimate chance to win and or just some momentum, right? Like if they knew it would fail, but it would be like a 22-10, or it would be like a something a little bit closer that they could build off of, I think they would present it. But I think because they knew it had zero chance, I think they politely asked Detroit, "Hey, let's walk this back and wait." But on a personal note, I think it has merit, the changing of the playoff format to where you're just ranking seeds based off of record. But I do think at the end of the day, the better team is going to win. Like we knew Washington last year was better than Tampa Bay. They had to go to Tampa Bay because Tampa won their division and Washington didn't. Washington won the game. So I don't think it really matters at the end of the day, but I do think that the NFL has initiative that they want to get this changed. But obviously the owners aren't on board just yet.
I'm curious as to why you think that is, because at least from a practical standpoint, it would make a lot of sense that the team that had a better regular season gets a home game versus a team that didn't because they played in a bad division.
That's an excellent question. All I can say is Mike Tomlin, the Steelers head coach, for example, loves divisions, old school division guy. And I do think it does present an easier route to having a home game, right? You just have, it's very cut and dry. Like, I think, these owners, a lot of them are rich businessmen, right? Who made their careers on assurances and guarantees. So for them, it's like, okay, and it's money, right? It's money. So if you're the Cowboys, and let's be honest, like, you play in a hard division, you know it's going to be tough to have a better record than Detroit. Oh, but if I win my division, I get to host a playoff game and all that money and revenue that comes in. So I think for them, they look at the dollar signs, right? So it's easier for them to win your division. You get a sure playoff game, you get all the money that comes with it, and you can sell division champs merchandise, which you could do anyways without the seedings, but whatever. But yeah, I think money certainly plays into it, along with the fact that it's a guaranteed home playoff game if you just have to win your division. But still, yeah, I mean, you would think that, like, the Vikings, brass would want this change, and other teams would want this change, that play in harder divisions and have to go on the road when you're 14-3, which had never happened prior to last year.
Yeah, that's just such a fascinating dynamic because of last year. And, like, as you mentioned, the better team is going to win regardless. I mean, I'll ask you this, because I have a number in my head. When I think of home field advantage in the NFL, I can think of about three teams that I legitimately believe have home field advantage. Is there a number that you have thought about? Like, do you really believe in this idea of home field advantage?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, Green Bay has an advantage, but I say that with the knowledge that the 49ers have gone in there several times in recent years, a warm weather team, and beaten them, right? And the Buccaneers, albeit they had Tom Brady, say a little bit of a cheat code, but they have too. So I have never honestly really, really thought about that. But, like, Philadelphia for sure, because A, it's cold and in the playoff time, and their fans are their fans. So I think Washington Washington could be one, obviously, with their fans and everything. And I'm going back decades, but their history, right? Like, Washington was known during the Joe Gibbs era as an incredibly hard place to play for teams, and I'm sure his home record represented that. So, but no, I don't think there's like for example, like, I don't think the Rams Stadium proposes any kind of threat to visiting teams, right? Maybe Minnesota, Chicago, if it ever got cold, but I don't think we have to worry about them hosting a playoff game anytime soon. But I think any team with cold weather is certainly going to have advantages. But no, I don't think there's any old, like again, let's look at the Vet back in the day with that awful turf. Like, most teams in these now are good enough where it's not going to be a huge disadvantage for a team that has to play there.
So as we pivot away, talking with Brian Diardo, CBS Sports, here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin, as we pivot away from all of the happenings of yesterday and the meetings, and just looking at this offseason broadly, you mentioned the Chicago Bears. They've had one of the better off seasons, but as we sit here now in, like, the realm of OTAs but not quite training camp, who do you think has had the best offseason across the league?
So, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on Washington air, but like, Washington I had penciled as, like, one. I think Chicago, as you alluded to, and I think Washington's had one of the best off seasons. Like, I think with the Samuel acquisition, Larry Tumsil, and then I thought the Jalen Lane acquisition later in the draft was great. The receiver that can back up, McLaurin, Noah Brown, and Samuel. And then you look at the defensive side, and free agency basically acquired three potential starters with Kinlaw and Wise on the defensive line and Harris the safety. And Wise, I thought, was a really nice signing. A longtime Patriot. I think he was on their last Super Bowl team with their dynasty, just a consummate professional, and that was an area that they needed to address. And I just thought they did a good job, like using the draft or the free agency to address specific issues that they kind of want to fix now. Like, they can't wait for rookies to come along and help on the defensive line. They needed, like, legit guys they could bring in that they know are going to help solidify that part of their team, which they did with Kinlaw and Wise. And they also got Samuel, so they, you know, they give Jaden Daniels yet another weapon. You know, so I think they've had a tremendous offseason. I would say the one thing they have to figure out, which I know I'm sure you've been talking about, is Terry McLaurin's his contract quickly got old. I remember when he signed it, like, oh, that's a great deal, good for him. And then I looked at it today, and I was like, oh, wow, this guy, this guy dated, like, super, super fast. So, yeah, so that's something they have to figure out. But you know, I thought they had a good offseason as well. And I, not a Cowboys fan, I will give them some credit. I mean, George Pickens, the person, there's a lot to be desired, but a very good acquisition for just a third-round pick. So that division only got tougher. I think in general, all four teams in the NFC East had very strong offseasons. So arguably the toughest division in the NFL is only going to get harder.
So I'll get you out of here on this, Brian. Jim Mercer passed away yesterday. We talked about his impact here because he was one of the first owners that spoke up against Dan Snyder when we all wanted Dan Snyder the hell up out of here. How do you think as a whole, though, the league ends up remembering Jim Mercer?
Great question. I think, and I just wrote about this for CBS, and it's a shame I oversaw the Snyder thing. That's a great nugget as well, Denton. But I remember him. He was great in the indie community, really great. But I think his legacy with the league is ultimate players owner. Like, represented three guys in the Hall of Fame. He would have done that more for players in the future had he not passed. Like, super charitable. I think him and like DeBartolo, the old 49ers owner, like, I don't think anybody really did more for their players than him. Like, while they played and after they played, like, Pat McAfee had a really nice tribute to him on social media. Like, he just went out of his way to celebrate his players and their accomplishments. Like, some people made fun of him for the Colts 2014 AFC finalist banner, but to me, I just thought that was just a symbol of how proud he was of his team's accomplishments. And, like, I think before he became their owner in 97, like, they'd had some success in Indy since moving from Baltimore, but, like, they really, I don't know, I think they were still kind of an afterthought in Indianapolis. I think once he got there and the things they did, I mean, people forget that, like, they easily could have taken Ryan Leaf over Manning, and most people wouldn't have thought much of it, but they didn't, and they took the right guy, and they made a lot of great moves with him as the owner. And so I think his legacy, that will also be included, that he brought the legacy of a winning culture to Indianapolis and made football there relevant.
Brian, appreciate the time as always, my friend. Hope you're doing well. We'll do this again soon.
Yeah, likewise. Anytime. Thanks.
That is Brian DiArdo, CBS Sports, kind enough to give us a few moments here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. By the way, for those that are wondering, the three teams that I think have the home field advantage in the NFL are the Seahawks, the Chiefs, and the Saints. The Saints, when that dome is blacked out, has to be like the most intimidating place to play in the NFL. Lights already dim, and then you have nothing but, you know, people in black shirts or jerseys or whatever. So it's like tough to see. I think that's one of the most intimidating places to play. That aside, big thanks to Brian. Always love having the conversation with him. Somebody needs to get on the phone with Jason Kelce. If he's going to do this, what he did, which is fine, it's totally fine that he defended the play in the way that he did. Does he want to teach it? He's not going to come here. I get that. He has said on multiple occasions he is not a fan of Washington, just based off of the years in the NFC East, playing here, us coming there, like what have you. He is not a fan of Washington. But eventually, that dude's going to go door to door to all these NFL teams and explain why this play works. And maybe it won't be as big of a deal. I will tell you what. I will love the tush push a lot more if this team starts doing it well. Now, I will also say this team had one of the best fourth down percentages in the entire NFL and did not need to use a quarterback sneak to get first downs because number five is dynamic as hell, whereas clearly Jalen Hurts is not as good of with some of those decisions. That's why they do the tushing of the pushing thing. He has big quads, whatever. All right, coming up, 15 minutes, Toby Altizer going to jump on with us, talk a little bit of Nationals baseball. What is the latest on Dylan Cruz, when we will see him back, and how the team has played to start this portion of the season. But coming up next, something Mark Gines said about the upcoming stadium at RFK that I think is going to make it a home run. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. He is out for tomorrow and all next week. I'm in on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday next week. I will not be in on Wednesday. I turn 30 next Wednesday, and I will not be working on that particular day. We're coming back with Taylor Swift for one reason. Mark Ein was on the Junkies earlier this morning, and they asked him about the stadium, a question that a lot of us have, which is like, what is going to be with the stadium when it eventually comes? And he had a really interesting comment that kind of alluded to this going about more than just football. Obviously, it will house the Commanders, but it is about more than just football. Here's Mark Ein on the Junkies from this morning.
You know, when we first got involved in the team, I was like, we gotta find a way to get Taylor Swift here. That'll like make it. And she just wouldn't come to the current stadium. And you can go on and on and on. There's a Club World Cup this summer that's going on. There's just so many events. You heard Roger allude no promises to a Super Bowl, but you did see the draft, which will be a million people. The catalyst for tourism at a time when the D.C. economy needs it most is this will be as big a catalyst as I can't imagine anything bigger. And so I think when people study all of it, they'll realize that the benefits of this are really, really significant and something that should happen.
So that's Mark Ein on the Junkies from this morning mentioning that he wanted to get Taylor Swift here. The second that Taylor Swift went on this insane world tour that lasted literally 3 years, and she said, I'm not coming to D.C., was the second that FedEx, now Northwest, was done. If you can't draw mega pop sensation like Taylor Swift, because D.C. is a big enough market, I don't really know the ins and the outs of that tour, but I know there were certain cities where she did multiple times for multiple days. L.A., I think she did twice, 3 days apiece. New York, I think she did twice, 3 days apiece. She might have done the same thing in Atlanta. D.C. is a big enough city to justify Taylor Swift over the course of this three-year tour coming here on more than one occasion and then doing a show on multiple days every time that she came here. When she didn't want to go to FedEx, FedEx was effectively off of the table as long as DC was on the table. Now that they have just about locked up RFK, they're thinking bigger. And I love this about the ownership. One of the benefits of having 20 some odd people is that there are people that are heavily invested in the football thing and they are letting the people do the football thing, right? We don't get all these voices from like the 19th guy on the ownership group on what he thinks they should do football wise. It's primarily Harris. You'll see Mitch Rails a little bit. You'll see Mark Ein from time to time. You see Magic a lot because he's super front facing and he should be because he's a megastar, but you're not getting a lot from everyone. But you will get a little bit of help and some guys that have some connections to make sure that you get whenever Taylor Swift drops new music and does a massive world tour again, you get Taylor Swift. When WWE comes calling and they need WrestleMania 50, you get WrestleMania 50. When the NCAA comes around and says, we want to host the Final Four in the championship in a new city, hey, look, we got a brand new stadium you can now host. I think DC, by the way, would be perfect for the NCAA Final Four. I remember in 2019, I went to the Elite Eight and Sweet 16. It was when Zion Williamson was here, and he played at Duke. And I wanted to see Zion Williamson in person. And we ended up seeing a bunch of really good games. That LSU team was really good. That was led by Naz Reid, who's playing now in Minnesota. Obviously, Zion was here. That Virginia Tech team, which was coached then by Buzz Williams, who is now the coach of Maryland. That team nearly beat Duke. You had that Michigan State team with Cassius Winston, who played a little bit. A cup of coffee here in D.C. with the Wizards. Like, you had a lot of really good teams and a lot of really good players that came through. Now, imagine that on a much grander scale with the championship and the Final Four, because let me tell you, Cap One at the time was buzzing. It was packed to the gills. Media was out the wazoo. I mean, they sat me, who was literally a nobody at that time, further back than the 400 section. I was legitimately the last seat in the stadium. There was not anybody in the 400 section that was further away than I was at that time. That, with the championship on the line, would be massive. And the revenue that would bring in, the money that would bring into the city and to the local businesses, would be massive. You could say the same thing with WrestleMania. I understand not everybody's a pro wrestling fan. I get that. But you would change your tune up when you realize that when they hosted WrestleMania in Philadelphia for WrestleMania 40, they did $20 million of revenue 6 months before the show started, because the ticket prices and the merch and the hotels and all these things, like, the company itself brought in so much money. You get that in D.C., you're going to bring in a ton of money. People travel to see Taylor Swift. Like, you'll get people from Delaware and West Virginia, Virginia, Maryland, parts of Carolina. Maybe you're coming up from Tennessee. I don't know the lengths that Swifties are going to go to travel. They're a different breed of human. I just don't fully understand the inner workings of a Taylor Swift mind. But I love the fact that Mark Guyon, who has been a great business person in our community for a very long time, he does a great job with the tennis element of the city and bringing the big superstars to his tennis tournament. What is he going to be able to do when you have this new state-of-the-art stadium? That should be incredibly exciting for everybody. That's why I was so excited about it coming to D.C., not to mention it's just in a much more commutable place. You can metro there. You can walk there. You don't have to walk a mile from the stadium to the metro station like it is currently in Landover. Like, it's just a lot easier to get to. But getting your Taylor Swifts here, I mean, I would say Kendrick, but Kendrick's already coming to Northwest. I still need to get my hands on some tickets. If anybody got some extras, let me know at the Denton Day on Twitter. I'm not above using my platform to get some Kendrick Lamar tickets because I'm absolutely not paying $400 for them. I do not get paid that much money. But you get what I mean. Like, getting these big pop stars to come here to D.C. is massive. So I love that Mark Guyon is thinking forwardly the way that he is. Coming up next, my guy Toby Altizer, he's going to be live in studio with me. We'll talk a little Nats baseball, talk a little bit about the Tush Push and some NFL stuff as well. Should Jaden Daniels play in the 2028 Olympic flag football game? We'll get Toby's thoughts on that. Don't go anywhere. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. Hit me up on Twitter at the Denton Day. Team 980 is coming back at you.
All right, an instant classic between the Pacers and Knicks last night. Tyrese Halliburton and Aaron Nesmith led a huge comeback in the fourth quarter. The Pacers scored 23 points in the final 3:14 regulation, sent it to overtime. They beat the Knicks 138-135. The Knicks set a record for most points scored in a conference final loss in NBA history. The Dallas Stars, they scored 5 unanswered goals in the third period to take game 1 of the Western Conference Finals over the Edmonton Oilers. They win 6-3. The Nats set to get going tonight against the Atlanta Braves. We'll see how the weather holds out. Trevor Williams expected to be on the bump, and Dylan Cruz has been placed on the 10-day IL. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin Sheehan. If you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, be sure to do that. At the Team 980, you see Kevin Sheehan live 10 to 1. You see Craig Hoffman 4 to 7. You might even see some Denton's Office on the YouTube channel as well. So subscribe to that. Joined now in studio by my guy Toby Altizer, co-host of the Bustin' Loose Baseball Podcast. Great pull by Max on the music. You can hear him periodically on 106.7 The Fan on weekends and on Grant and Danny as well. Toby, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, man. Always great to talk Nats baseball. It's been a while since we've had a chance to catch up, so excited to chat.
Yeah, you came in here wearing the swaggy hoodie, too. I wish I had you on stream right now, but I love the Jordan 1s, so this hoodie is pretty silly. I like it.
I appreciate it, yeah. My uncle got it for me years back. I probably don't wear it enough. It's a pretty cool hoodie.
It is a pretty cool hoodie, but I feel like those vintage pieces, you know, as we transition to fashion radio here on the Team 980, those vintage pieces that you don't wear all the time, like you can't wear that every day, but when you do wear it, turn some heads.
You get noticed. I've got everybody I've seen so far has complimented my hoodie. So
we call it a neck breaker in the business of fashion here. It's fashion 101. So I asked you on here for a couple of different reasons. One, you're a five-tool player, so you can talk about everything, mm-hmm. and it makes life a lot easier as a guest who can talk about everything. But I did want to ask about Dylan Cruz. Goes on the 10-day IL. What is the worry about what he is going to be dealing with for the next couple of days? Because it really felt like he was starting to hit his stride at the plate after the first couple of games where he was struggling immensely.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. It's an oblique injury, and you never like to hear that with a baseball player because rotation, being able to swing and everything, and it's been something that's bothered him for a couple of days, and then it kind of grabbed especially bad the other night against the Braves, and now he goes on the 10-day injured list, but you know, I don't know how severe this thing is. This is one of those that you have to be extra careful, and I think especially for a guy like Dylan, who has struggled and is a rookie, you don't want to put him in extra danger. So I don't know what the timeline would be. It's on the 10-day injured list, so he could be back as early as 10 days, but it also could be something that lingers a couple of weeks, and you just want to make sure he's 100% healthy. So that'll be interesting to see, but really, if you look at a season in 15-game increments, he's basically played about 45 games. First 15 games were horrendous. The middle 15 there, he made an adjustment. He was hitting around 280. And then the last 15 have kind of been a struggle, but the last two games he's played in, he's homered. So he's, you know, I think it's just ups and downs. I think some people set too high of expectations for him as a rookie. Mm-hmm. I think people were thinking that with how we were talking about James Wood as like an MVP caliber, they're like, oh, well, Dylan Cruz is right there because he was the number two pick. And they're really not similar types of players. Like Jackson Holliday, he reminds me a lot of him in Baltimore, where Holliday to me is going to be a really good player. He's going to help you out, but I don't know that he's MVP caliber. I think that's kind of Dylan Cruz. So I think it's just been kind of up and down, but now the injury I think is going to be interesting to see how long he's going to be out.
What is the replacement for him? Because he's so good on defense. He's playing well, swinging the bat. How do they replace him? Is it more by committee?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Robert Hassel. That's who they called up to make his major league debut yesterday. Now he's probably going to make his major league debut tonight. But if there's a position that they can deal with some injuries at, it's the outfield. They have a bunch of guys. Daylen Lyle's a guy that we were impressed with down in spring training, and he's been shooting up the system. He could potentially make his debut at some point this season as well. But Robert Hassel, another part of the Juan Soto deal, he's kind of just solid at everything. He's not going to wow you with anything, but he's good at everything. So I think he's going to fill in just fine. They needed a center fielder because Jacob Young has not been in the lineup since he ran into the wall in Baltimore. So Robert Hassel, I don't think, is a huge fall off defensively. He's not going to give you the same power that Dylan Cruz can give you, but he can give you a solid bat as well.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the Nats are they're playing hot as ever right now. Four games in a row, right? Obviously, last night was rained out. But what are the expectations moving forward? Because now it feels like you're at a – I don't know how you feel. I don't really pay attention to standings until Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's like a good time to look at it for the first time. But it feels like they're playing really good baseball, given expectations.
So I think here's the issue that they ran themselves into. If they would have had the same messaging that they've had the last couple of years, talking about Mike Rizzo, talking about Davey Martinez, where they were saying, look, maybe the wins and losses aren't there. They never necessarily said exactly that, but they were like, focus on the young guys. Watch how they do, and that'll kind of determine a successful season. And, you know, they're going to talk about wins and losses, but we kind of understood where they're talking. This spring training, this early season, they're talking about, we're trying to win. We're trying to win. We're looking above 500. So in terms of that, expectations obviously been disappointing, but I think when you look at the young guys, how well they've done, James Wood has been spectacular. CJ Abrams has been statistically the best offensive shortstop in all of baseball. Mackenzie Gore leads the league in strikeouts. Like there's been some encouraging things. The bullpen just so bad.
I was going to ask about them because like you see Mackenzie Gore and he's been really well. He's been really good this year, right? Now the record's not great. He's sitting at 2-4, but when you watch him pitch, you're like, all right, yep, this is the guy that we hoped he was going to be. And then when he turns the ball over, you're like, oh, God.
It's so true. Yeah, the bullpen just, I like where they're at now because they're depending on a lot of young guys who I can give a leash to. When Lucas Sims, who has had a decent big league career, but when he's struggling and you're continually handing him the ball with an ERA, I was telling Danny, we were watching the game sitting a couple of weeks ago, and you know when they have guys warming in the pen, they throw up on their banner who's warming up. And you know, you have Lucas Sims warm up with a 8 ERA, and you had Jackson Rutledge warm up with a 2 ERA, and you're like, oh, okay, they'll go with Rutledge for the bigger spot here. No, they're going to go with Sims because he's the vet.
Sims.
So I think, you know, now that you've got past that where Poche's gone, Sims is gone, and Cole Henry's getting bigger work, and he's a young guy. Jackson Rutledge is getting more work. Even Ferrer has struggled, but he's getting more big-time work. He's a young guy. I can give them a leash. I can't give a leash to a guy that's just not good, that's a vet, and you continually trot them out there in big spots.
Right. Because at that point, it feels like you are just repeating the same mistake.
Exactly right.
With no awareness of the mistake happening.
Yeah, and I think Jorge Lopez is one of those vets, kind of one of the last ones in there aside from Kyle Finnegan. And he's starting to turn a corner and get back to the Jorge Lopez that's been a solid reliever throughout his career. But for the most part, it's a lot of young guys. And so I think there's going to have to be some patience. I don't know that it's ever going to be a good pen. There are going to be stretches where they look fine for a week, and then the next week they blow up again. So I think it's just going to be a roller coaster with them. If the pen pitches well, I think this can actually be a team that approaches, you know, a 75, 76 win mark. But in terms of where the expectations are now, I think they're kind of in the same spot they've been the last 2 years.
Do you think C.J. Abrams might be getting skipped over nationally? Because you said he's been one of the best offensive shortstops in the game to this point in the season. It feels like that's not talked about a ton. Do you think that's because of the record or because his name isn't as big as some of the other shortstops across Major League Baseball?
His name is not as big because when you think about Bobby Witt, you think about Gunnar Henderson, those guys get the recognition, but I think it has to do with the record. You know, honestly, if this team were better, he would be the driving force. I mean, he's hitting above 300. He was an all-star last year, so I think he's getting a little bit more. Right now, if you had to choose who's going to represent the team in Atlanta for the All-Star game. I think you'd have two. I think you'd have James Wood, and I think you'd have C.J. Abrams. So I think it's still growing, but he also needs to improve defensively, and he hasn't had quite the C.J. moments yet. Like, he's been spectacular, but the C.J. moments where he's pimping a home run and
backflip.
Yeah, the swag. C.J., we haven't had quite that moment yet this season, but I think if he continues doing what he's doing, he's going to get recognized.
I feel like
more.
That's such an important part when it comes to taking your name of like C.J. Abrams, who we around here know that he's good, but taking it to that level of a Bobby Witt, a Gunnar Henderson, or whoever, if your team's not good, you have to give people a reason to watch you. I've always loved the swag element of it. Like, that's why I love Tatis. I fell in love with Bryce Harper for that same reason, so I'm with you. I'd love to see more of that from Abrams.
Yeah, and he has it. It's just he hasn't had that opportunity yet, right? Like, he definitely has that part of his game. So I think you just get him in a good spot, you know, eighth inning, tie ball game, he hits a home run, you'll get that. They just haven't had that opportunity yet.
Toby Altizer sitting in with me here. It is the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on this Thursday. You're going to get Linnell tomorrow. Chris Russell is going to take over in about 12 minutes here. But before we do that, I do want to pivot to the Tush Push. Tush Push, we thought was going to get banned. Everyone that we trusted said was going to get banned. It does not get banned. Your reaction to that was what?
I hate it. I don't understand why it's still a football play. I don't understand why it's still in the game. And for people that think it's just about the Philadelphia Eagles, sure, it is a large part of it is. I don't like assisting ball carriers at any point in the football field.
Right.
Because to me, the tush push obviously is the big one that gains a lot of notoriety, and understandably so. But to me, the issue is when you have that pile that's at the 40-yard line and you're pushing and everybody's like, oh, look at the running back still pushing forward for 6 yards. It ain't the running back. It ain't the running back. And my thing is, how do you police it? Where if I'm a defender and I'm not in the pile and I come in and pile drive through the pile, I get a 15-yard penalty for unnecessary roughness.
Right.
But I'm trying to push the pile backwards and you're still letting... I think that needs to be gotten rid of. And I think they're pretty close because that seems like what the Packers changed their proposal to be was more don't allow any assistance to the ball carrier. They just needed two more votes, but I'm disappointed that it's not gone.
So you and I are in the same house but different rooms on this because I don't love the tush push, but what I don't like about it is that they police it so heavily for defense but not for offense. Like, I cannot stand how every single time half of Philadelphia's offensive line is offsides. And they're just like, well, I mean, that's just how it is. Like, you're watching all of these dudes and like, if you're going to make the play illegal, like, you have to give then leeway to the defense to also do things that are traditionally illegal. We've seen that with Daron Payne when he stuck his hand under the football on one of the plays where Jason Kelce was snapping 2 years ago. And then Kelce gets on his podcast, complains about it. And the NFL's like, you can't do that anymore. That's my stance is if you're going to allow the play to happen, you got to make it fair for both sides to actually stop the damn thing rather than just, oh, it's a guaranteed first down for Philadelphia. Or in some instances, it's a guaranteed touchdown for Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have the play and you're going to leave it, call neutral zone infractions on the offense, which never happens. You can't let Jason Kelce have his helmet a yard in front of the football where he's snapping it. Enforce the rules how they're supposed to be enforced. I get that it's a different style of play and it's not going to look traditional and they're going to tighten their splits and they're going to get closer. I get all those things, but let's enforce the neutral zone like we do on every other football play. And then I think maybe you're a little more even because right now it's not an even play.
Right.
And it needs to be. It's just frankly, I understand the Eagles are better at it than everyone else. Anyone else can do it. I get all those arguments. And if you're a Philadelphia fan, whatever. I don't care. At some point, it needs to be a football play, and it's not right now because they're able to do stuff that, frankly, shouldn't be allowed.
I mean, if you're a Philadelphia fan and you're listening to the show, you probably suck anyway. I mean, we appreciate you listening, but personality-wise, you're probably not up there. There are actually a lot of Eagles fans in this office, which is infuriating. We have a cluster of stations here, and there's a lot of Eagles fans here.
There is an office with an Eagles flag.
Every time I walk out of this building, I have to look at it. Yeah, and the night they beat us, I stared at it for a minute and was like,
you're like, should I light this on fire?
I thought about it.
Should I go full-blown P. Diddy and just light this whole thing on fire? I got a Molotov cocktail. Apparently, there's some salespeople like the Eagles, too. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like,
yeah,
you know,
disappointing.
What you're selling? It's very disappointing.
Disappointing.
Final question for you before I let you get out of here. This is a question that we asked in our second hour. Olympics coming up, 2028. Do you want to see Jaden Daniels in the Olympics?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No matter what.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's flag football. Like, I think sometimes we get in this idea, like, people get so worried about injuries. Understandably so. You don't want to have something happen that ends up costing him a season. You don't want that. At the same point, can Jaden not go work out? Can he not go run on the track somewhere? Can he not go lift weights? Can he not go throw routes? Like, he's doing the exact same stuff. It's amped up a little bit, obviously. Right. And it's also right before training camp. So it's not as if he's not going to be getting... It's not middle of the offseason. It's like, hey, man, you should be chilling. He's going to be ramping up anyways. Even if he's not playing in L.A. in the Olympics, flag football, he's going to be ramping up regardless. So I would love to see him there.
My thought was I would love to see him there if the team has won a championship by then, because I want him to become the first quarterback to win a Super Bowl and an Olympic gold medal.
That would be sick.
I would, like, I'm selfish, but if you follow the trajectory that the team is currently on, it feels like by 2028, it would be feasible to think that they could have played in one and then potentially won a Super Bowl. And at that point, go get him, killer. Go win a gold medal and go win a Super Bowl. He is Toby Altizer. Toby, appreciate the time as always, my friend. It's good to see you.
Always good to chat, man.
That is Toby Altizer. You can hear him on the Bust and Lose Baseball podcast. He and Grant Paulson. And he's just periodically around on Grant and Danny on the weekends on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 as well. So you hear Toby in a lot of different places. Before we hand the microphone over to one Chris Russell, Kevin is going to be out next week. I am filling in majority of the week for Kevin. Max, I have not told you this, but I think you are going to enjoy this in some capacity.
Uh-oh.
I have started a new personal venture.
Tell me more.
I bought a stand-up paddleboard.
Oh, boy.
See, out of left field, not a lot of people anticipated it, but no. I figured on Wednesday I turned 30. 30 All right. is a bit of a bigger birthday. I don't normally get myself birthday presents.
But this is a big one.
But this is a big one, so I was like, I have, like, you know, adult money. Now, as I turn 30, which most 30-year-olds do, I was like, let me get a stand-up paddleboard. I love paddleboarding. There are a lot of places around here within, you know, 50-ish miles or so to get on a paddleboard. I would heavily emphasize the 50-ish miles portion of that because
the
Potomac is gross. It's not a fun place. If I was paddleboarding on the Potomac, which I eventually will in some capacity, I will not be falling in because I don't want to fall in. I like superheroes. I've always wanted to be bitten by a radioactive spider. What I do not want is to fall in the Potomac and then come out with a third eye on my back. Don't need that one. That water's gross. But I'm excited about this new 30-year-old Denton that is now going to be a paddleboard phenom known across the DMV region.
I'm looking forward to seeing this. We're going to have to get you out to Great Falls, too, when the rapids are going. Get you going down.
Yeah, maybe next year. You know,
yeah.
I need calm waters first. But
of course.
Maybe I'll be a paddleboard content creator. What does that space look like?
I think it's
called a SUP, by the way. A stand-up paddleboard. A SUP.
I think it's an untapped market.
I think it is an untapped market. So be on the lookout. Denton's office on the Team 980's YouTube page, and maybe Denton's office from a paddleboard on the Team 980's YouTube page. That's a bit. I'll just start doing Denton's office by holding my cell phone up and filming me as I am paddling in, like, places in Ashburn and in Occoquan, Virginia, if that's a real place. I think it is.
Hold on. Say it again.
Occoquan?
Occoquan? Nope.
Aquaquan?
Closer.
Oh, there we go.
Occoquan, yes.
That was my fourth guess. Just take my word on that. All right, that is it for me. Chris Russell is coming up next. Big thanks to Alex Drove, Toby Altizer, and Brian DiArdo. Hit me up on Twitter if you're not following me already. Subscribe to the Team 980's YouTube page. The Rooster coming up next.